It's Monday, the 25th of January, 2016. Happy birthday to AC Law. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Stop Bunting Please. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Stop Bunting Please and be a sponsor of the podcast for a day, it is very straightforward. All you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be said sponsor. Did I mention my name is Josh Lloyd? If not, it's me. I'm here. We're going to talk about the NBA, as per usual, of course. As you can see, if you're watching on this video, got myself a new jersey. I'll hold it up for you guys to see. Make sure you can see it. There you go. My Giannis Antetokounmpo jersey arrived today, so I'm pretty happy with that. Looks nice. I love the new Bucks uniforms and new colors. Enough about my fashion choice, though, which is as poor as it is.
Let's get to it.
Now, a few people complained they didn't like the new sound drops for the intros to the segments. I put a poll up on Twitter. Apparently most people didn't like them, so they're gone. We're done with them. We're going to be talking the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to James Harden of the Houston Rockets. Another triple-double for Harden. He played 36 minutes, had 23 points, 15 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 threes, 2 blocks, hit 6 shots from the free throw line, which is actually probably a little bit low from what you expect from him. Not a great shooting night from the field, 7 of 18. But you can't complain for that sort of numbers from Harden. He's been putting up some pretty impressive numbers. In fact, his last four games, he's averaging 26.5 points, 3.5 triples, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. He's averaging a triple-double. That's fairly impactful. And going 45 from the field and 85 from the free throw line. So James Harden, still a top five player. Yes, he's had a few ups and downs, but I'm not... I own him. I'm definitely not complaining with what Jim is giving me at the moment. The waiver wire line of the night is Terrence Ross of the Toronto Raptors. He played 33 minutes, had 18 points, including 5 triples, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals on 6 of 10 shooting. Now, we know that Ross can get hot. He's probably the best player out of that group of himself and James Johnson and Corey Joseph, but the consistency is just not there. But out of those three guys, he's probably the one who is more likely to have a big game. You just don't know when it's going to happen. And that makes him pretty much impossible to own, I guess, for 12-team leagues. Although, when you look at his numbers the last 2 weeks, he's a top 70 player. He's averaging 2.6 triples. Now, it does get spread out with big games and small games, but his last four, he's hitting 3.3. That's obviously useful. That's top 50 value. He's giving you, over the last month, over a steal a game. In the last 2 weeks, he's shooting a completely unsustainable 62% from the field. So I'd expect that to drop. So I'm definitely not rushing to add Terrence Ross in 12-team leagues. But he's the most talented out of those wing players between him and Johnson and Joseph. I wouldn't be surprised if he found himself in a 28-minute role. But I'm not dropping anyone of massive value to go and do it. I do really believe in Terrence Ross as an NBA player, as an NBA rotational player. He's got a pretty good opportunity here for some decent run, but it's just there's a lot of inconsistency there, so that's making him marginally appealing. Again, depending on who I'm dropping and what my team needs. The young gun of the night, my boy, Salah Mejri of the Dallas Mavericks. Mejri got his second NBA start. He played 29 minutes, had 10 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 blocks on 4 of 6 shooting. Hit both of his free throws. I mentioned him yesterday as a real sneaky DFS play if Zaza was going to miss. And Zaza did indeed miss. And Mejri got the start and played well. There was no JaVale McGee in this one. He's starting to really come on, Mejri. He's putting up some really good numbers. And if you have a look what he's done recently, the last 2 weeks of action, he's played 3 games only, averaging 21 minutes, but 10.7 points, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks on 80% from the field and 73% from the free throw line. We're not adding him in 12-team leagues. We're probably not even adding him in 14-team leagues. But the way that he's playing, the last couple of games, he had that really nice showing against Oklahoma City and a pretty decent showing here as well. you have to think that he's in line for at least more consistent minutes, and maybe he's taking some of them off JaVale McGee. A real interesting guy, the big man from Tunisia. There's something about him, and there's something that I do like about him from a fantasy point of view. He's a big man who's going to shoot really good percentages in both categories. He's going to block shots, he'll get rebounds, he can score. I think there's a little bit to him, and he's a guy to watch for in deeper leagues and dynasty leagues. Like, Zaza's going to be there forever. It's not like JaVale McGee's a foundational building block. I don't think the Mejri is a foundational building block either, but he could carve himself a pretty decent role over the coming seasons, and his game is relatively fantasy friendly. His per 36 numbers for the season, 14 and 11.5, half a steal, 3.5 blocks on 75 and 73. These are really good numbers, clearly, and I reckon he would have had a pretty big impact in some DFS lineups for Sunday. So good old Salah Mejri, a guy who I mentioned. When did I mention him? Sometime last week, and someone tweeted at me, who the hell are you talking about when you're talking about Salah Mejri? I reckon everyone listening to this podcast would know who Mejri is now, and definitely keep an eye on him, because, yeah, he is quite an impressive player. The dud of the night, same game. Salah Mejri's teammate, Darren Williams, played 32 minutes but really struggled. Hit only 1 of 9 of his shots, had 4 points, 1 rebound, and 5 assists. Definitely not his greatest performance of the season. He's still been really good this season, much better than people anticipated. He's averaging 14 points, 3 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 1.5 threes and a steal. These are all pretty good numbers. Just an off night for Darren. Nothing to panic about. There's no one's taking over his role. Devin Harris isn't coming for it. JJ Barea is not coming for it. As long as Williams stays healthy, 32 minutes are going to be his, and he's going to produce similar to what he's done already this season. Just a bad night from Darren. And we move on from there. Let's now look at the perfect DFS lineup for Sunday. There we go. At point guard, Shane Larkin, 30.6. Still in a backup role. Still played less than Donald Sloan, but outperformed him again. And I still maintain that he is the better player than Donald Sloan. For as much as the Nets might not want to believe that, Larkin, he is a better player than Donald Sloan. And Ross Westbrook at 49.7. I was cautious about recommending using Thunder players yesterday, because I thought that they would handle the Nets and have it done by the third quarter. Apparently not. The Nets got the victory over the Thunder, so Westbrook and KD both had to play bigger minutes, and the fantasy points come. At shooting guard, James Harden at 58 and Terrence Ross at 31.8. Talked about them already. Small forwards, Chandler Parsons, 45.7. He is flying at the moment. He is someone we can definitely exploit his low salary on DFS until it catches up. And Trevor Ariza, with his best game of the season, put up 41.6. He hasn't been good. This is his best game of the year. Not really something that we're going to bank too much on going forward, but let's hope that he does sort of build on this moving forward. At power forward, I've spelt Thaddeus Young wrong on the graphic there. I apologize for that. 38.3 for Thad. He had a good game against the Thunder. And Jared Sullinger put up 33.7, even with Amir Johnson back in the lineup. So a decent night from him. All those Celtics guys, it's always a crapshoot. Who's going to get the big production? It's going to come from someone. You just never know which guy it's going to come from. Today, it was Sullinger. And at center, Brook Lopez did take advantage of the fact that Steven Adams was out of the lineup, and he posted 51 daily fantasy points. That would have given you a total of 380.4 points. All right, let's now get into these games and break them down in just a little bit more detail. I'll bring that up on the screen for you guys. Where are we? There we go. Got that up on the screen for you. All right, the first game was the Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets. Chandler Parsons, 31 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. I talked about him in the last couple of shows. He is really, really firing at the moment. He was a guy that, if he was healthy coming to the season, I thought he was going to have a massive bounce back, top 50, top 40 sort of season. He looks like he's going to be that guy for the second half of the year, looking really good at the moment. With Darren Williams struggling and Devin Harris injured, Ray Felton played 34 minutes and went 16-8. Had a 3, had 2 assists, and had a steal. If Harris has to remain out for some time, which he could, he's dealing with a toe sprain, and they can be a bit of a prick to get better from. Felton, we saw early this year, playing in a bench role and playing 28, 29 minutes a game, he was useful. I'm not rushing to grab him, but I just want to see what happens with Harris's injury, and in the next game, maybe you get a week's worth of top 100 production from Ray Felton. Maybe. Dirk was back, 19 points with 4 triples, not a lot else. While Wes Matthews also had 4 triples with 15 points and also not a lot else. The rest of the bench, not huge amounts to talk about with those guys. Dwight Powell did play 14 minutes, and I mentioned before that JaVale McGee did not see the court at all. On the Rockets, Trevor Ariza, 29-3-2, 6 triples and 3 steals. A really nice shooting night as well. 11 from 15, that's not something that he's been known to do this season. He's had a relatively poor season, but when you look at his overall numbers, you go, yeah, Trevor Ariza's had a poor season, but he's the 58th ranked player on the year. He's ranked 33rd over the last 2 weeks. So on the surface, his numbers look poor, but he's giving you 2 steals a game and 2.5 threes a game. They're massive, massive numbers, like huge numbers. 14 points, nothing else is great, but we're talking about big numbers in the threes and steals categories. They're huge. And his last 2 weeks where he's shooting 47% from the field, if he keeps that up, he's a top 40 sort of player. So definitely an underrated guy, and if he hadn't had a big game here, you probably would have been able to buy pretty low on him. But he's in that solid 50 to 70 sort of range for the season, which I'm sure would have surprised quite a lot of people who own him. He seriously has been dropped in leagues, and you can go and pick him up off waiver wire in some. I reckon probably not now, but you could have done that. The Rockets kept Corey Brewer in the starting lineup. He had 13 points, 3 assists, 4 steals, and a block, but we'll leave him for a deeper league situation. And Josh Smith. What do we do with Josh Smith? He had 16 points in 23 minutes. He had Richie Beno, 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. He also had 2 assists, and he had 3 rebounds on 6 of 14 shooting. I'm all for adding him. In a 12-team league, if he's going to be playing a 20-minute role, which it looks like, because a newsflash to anyone who doesn't realize it, Terrence Jones is not good. He's just not a good player. And Smith could easily play over him for the remainder of the season. Big, big numbers for Smith across the board. That's 2 games. He's thriving in Houston. If you can withstand his percentages, add him. You're going to get good numbers in the other areas. Now, Jones only played 10 minutes and had 1 point and 1 assist. He's literally terrible. He is not a good basketball player. And Clint Capela got a start with Dwight Howard out, 8-5 with 2 assists and 24 minutes. The emergence of Smith is also limiting Capela's ability to remain viable, with Dwight Howard likely to return pretty soon. So, Jones, if there's someone you want, there's not a huge amount of point in stashing Terrence Jones at this point. Ty Lawson played 24 off the bench, 10 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, while Pat Beverly went 7-9-4 in his 31 minutes back from the ankle injury. He's still probably a deeper 12 or 14-team league target, Patrick Beverly. The Clippers and the Raptors were up next. The Clippers, big loss for them, huge win for the Raptors. Chris Paul, 23-4-11, 3 threes, 2 steals, and a block. Really nice field goal percentage from him. While DeAndre Jordan had 15-13 in his 32 minutes. Predictably struggled at the line, didn't get a block, and hasn't had a blocker for the last 3 games now. And JJ Redick, 17 points with 2 triples and not a lot else. They're the big name guys for the Clippers. There was literally nothing else happening for this team. Wes Johnson played 28 minutes and went 6-4. Paul Pierce, Luke Marmute, there's just so many non-contributors on this team. It's frightening. Jamal Crawford played 19 minutes for 3 points. You can't own any of these guys. Even Cole Aldrich, who'd been playing pretty well, didn't have his greatest night. 2 points in 11 minutes with a block. There's just a whole bunch of nothingness happening on this. Lance Stephenson had 8 points in 8 minutes, and Stephenson at 8 points was the 4th highest scorer on this team. That's how bad things are behind Paul, Redick, and Jordan. Not a good bench unit at all. For the Raptors, Kyle Lowry, 21-4-6. He had 3 triples, a good night for him. And DeMar DeRozan, wasn't his best performance, 6 of 17, 18-5-2, and a couple of threes, but still pretty impressive stuff. And Jonas Valanciunas had 20 points in only 25 minutes, 8 boards and a block, and really nice 8 of 11 shooting. The power forward situation, Luis Scola, 0 points in 18 minutes, while Pat had 10-6 with a couple of threes, a steal, and a block in his 27 minutes. They are not enticing me to own them anywhere. And Corey Joseph had a bit of a better game, 12-2-3 in 23 minutes with a couple of steals. Talked about James Johnson earlier. He played just 15 minutes and had 2-1-2, and he's definitely not a standard league target. The Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers, one of the rescheduled games. Marcus Smart, really, really big performance across the whole stat categories. 16-3-2, 4 steals, 1 block, 3 triples. I reckon he should be owned in all 12 team leagues. Rotisserie, maybe not because of the percentages, although he was 6 of 11 here. That might hurt you, but his ability to rack up numbers and get bulk steals and bulk threes, nice rebounds for a point guard, is really impressive. Now, it was inflated a bit because it was against the Sixers. Isaiah Thomas only played 24 minutes because it was against the Sixers. So take a little bit of a grain of salt there, but Marcus Smart is still close to a top 100 player, even if you're not considering this sort of performance. Jay Crowder had 20 points with 4 threes and 2 steals. Avery Bradley went 19, 2 and 4 with 3 threes. And Amir Johnson, in only 20 minutes, had 3 points, but 12 boards, 5 assists, 2 steals and a block. It's the benefits of going up against the Philadelphia front court. While Jared Sullinger had 8, 11 and 7 with a steal in his 26 minutes. The fact that Sullinger played well, Johnson played well, Jonas Jerebko played 21 minutes, Kelly Olynyk was limited to only 16, going 5-1-1. I'm still holding Olynyk, even though I mentioned this the other day. He'd been playing well. It was time for Brad Stevens to drop a 16-minute game from him. It happened here. It'll probably happen based on past history. You know, Olynyk will probably play 18 minutes for the next 3 games, and you'll be, oh, I've got to drop this guy. Jeez, what's he doing? And then he'll play 28 minutes for 4 straight and put up monster numbers. Overall, the average of what he's doing makes him ownable in most leagues. You get tempted to drop, but at this point, I'm going to be holding just a little bit longer, and hopefully it turns into something more consistent, but I'm never holding my breath with Brad Stevens running things. For the Sixers, Bob Cove, he's officially back, maybe? 25 and 8 for Bob Cove, 6 threes, 1 assist, 1 steal. The field goal percentage is always going to be bad, but when you're getting those numbers from him, you shouldn't really care. Big name from him, make sure he is owned. Nerlens Noel only played 27 minutes, 12 and 9 with a steal and a block. While Jolly Lokofor, he wasn't at his best. 30 minutes for 10 and 6, did add 2 blocks, but clearly not his best performance. They're the only 3 players who got into double digits. Ish Smith was only 3 of 12 for 7 points, did add 4 assists, 2 steals and a block, but this was always a nightmarish situation for him going up against the Boston backcourt, and they shut him down. And Jakar Sampson, I don't know why this guy, even on the Sixers, Jakar Sampson shouldn't be getting minutes. He started and played 9 minutes and had 2 points, and it's just, it's 9 minutes that should go to someone else. Nick Stauskas did return. He played 15 minutes for 2 points. Isaiah Cannon only had 7 in his 15 minutes, and there's really nothing else to like at all from looking at this Sixers box score. The last game of the night was a game that was rescheduled. It was pushed back from earlier in the day to later in the day. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Brooklyn Nets. I mentioned earlier that the Nets got the victory. Bit of an upset there. Kevin Durant played 41 minutes, 32, 10 and 7, 2 threes, 2 steals, 1 block. And Russ Westbrook went 27, 11 and 7 with a 3 and a steal. So big games from both of those guys. And Campaign, I thought the Campaign was going to be a really nice DFS option because Westbrook would play 27 minutes and Payne would get 24. Payne only needed 13 minutes to put up 10 points, 2 threes, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 1 block. He'd been a little bit down in form, but a real bounce back from him. He should be owned in pretty much all 14-team leagues, Campaign. Serge Ibaka, 10-8 with a steal and a block. He's just very ho-hum at the moment. Andre Robertson lasted 15 minutes before suffering a knee sprain. That meant Deion Waiters had to play 33 minutes. Kyle Singler got 21 minutes, so some extra run for those guys. None of them are going to be enough for me to own them in standard leagues or anything like that. I'd look at Waiters in a 14-team format, but that's really about it. Stephen Adams was out, so Enes Kanter played 30 minutes, 8 and 10. And it's really not commonplace shooting from him. That's the wrong word, but you know what I mean. 4 of 12 shooting from the field from Kanter, which is not something you usually expect. He's still a borderline 12-team league guy. On the Nets, Brook Lopez feasted without Stephen Adams, 31 and 10 for Lopez, 2 assists and 3 blocks, while Shane Larkin, who I touched on earlier, he played 21 minutes, 9 points, but 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals and 2 blocks is a fantastic haul. He shouldn't be owned in 12-team leagues, but he's better player than Donald Sloan. Now, Sloan went 11, 6 and 2 with 2 threes and 2 steals, so still some decent numbers, and honestly, if I'm owning one of them, I still probably am owning Sloan, but he's got a very tenuous grasp on this job and on a roster spot on my fantasy team. Joe Johnson handed out 6 assists to go with his 13 points, and Thad Young bounced back with 14 and 14 in 39 minutes. It was also a good night from Bojan Bogdanovic, who had 18, 3 and 3 with 4 triples. And Wayne Ellington continues to start and continues to just do very, very little. 9 and 6 for him in 27 minutes. That's it. That's the games from Sunday. Now, before we go any further, it's time for a quick word from our sponsor, and today that is SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest way to buy and sell tickets for live events. You can use it to find the best deals on tickets to NBA and NHL games, college basketball, and concerts. And if your NFL team is still in the playoffs, first of all, congratulations, you'll want to hear about SeatGeek's latest offer. SeatGeek is a lot like Kayak or Expedia, but it's for sports and concert tickets. It pulls all of the tickets available on other sites into one place to make comparison shopping easy. SeatGeek also grades every ticket from 0 to 100 based on value so you can quickly find the best deal within your budget. Best of all, SeatGeek always shows you the full price of each ticket up front, which means no surprise fees. If you look at Super Bowl tickets on StubHub, they tack on hundreds, even thousands of dollars in fees at checkout, so don't be fooled. Use SeatGeek instead. There is a special Super Bowl offer. All of my listeners can get a $20 rebate on their first SeatGeek purchase, but if you buy Super Bowl tickets on SeatGeek, after entering promo code REDROCK, SeatGeek will send you $100. That's right, $100 back if you use the promo code REDROCK on SeatGeek to buy Super Bowl tickets. Here's how it works. Download the free SeatGeek app. Oh yeah, go to settings tab and click add a promo code. I'm gonna bring this up on screen so you can see what I'm talking about, the SeatGeek deal. Add a promo code, enter the promo code REDROCK, SeatGeek, that's one word by the way, REDROCK, SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase, or $100 if you use SeatGeek to buy Super Bowl tickets. Download the free SeatGeek app right now and enter promo code REDROCK. Also, if your NFL team is in the Super Bowl, Denver or Carolina fans, congratulations, neither of those are my team. I don't think I'm ever going to see my team in a Super Bowl, unfortunately. It feels like all of my sporting teams are destined never to win a title in my life. Maybe one day. But if your team's in, congratulations. If you're living in it's in San Francisco, the Super Bowl, isn't it? If you're living in the San Francisco area and looking for a Super Bowl ticket, go on SeatGeek and use that promo code REDROCK and $100 off. Yes, Super Bowl tickets are expensive, but $100 off is $100 off. You might be able to get yourself a good deal and get yourself to the game. All right, before we move into the DFS portion of the show, what I want to do is look at some trades in the weekly trade talk segment. Had an interesting one come through. Every Monday I'll ask you guys to send through some trades you're looking at, and I'll pick one of them to go through and see what we can make of it. I'm going to bring this one up on screen now. Just get the trade analyzer up on Basketball Monster. All right. There we go. So this came in from listener Scott Robbins, who's actually in the Red Rock Dynasty League. This trade doesn't come from the Dynasty League, and it's not one trade. It's a whole range of trades. And what I really want to go through is with you is sort of the thought process behind it. All right. So Scott's written in. Okay. I had an interesting week in my hometown Money League. It was a standard eight cat head to head 10 team, 16 player roster, 10 starters. He says, I was shallow at point guard, so I acquired Reggie Jackson in exchange for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and George Hill. My trade partner was losing assists every week despite having Jackson. And after that deal, Scott says, I had to recover some steals and threes. Okay, so then he said, I offered and subsequently traded Draymond Green for Gordon Hayward and Ish Smith. Draymond's free throw percentage was starting to hurt. He was keeping me from being elite at free throw percentage. I took some heat for this one, but it's a great deal providing Ish keeps the job in Philly. I think you're pretty safe there, Scott. It also recoups some of the steals I lost, but I still need threes. Trade three. I had just picked up Tyson Chandler and Willie Cauley-Stein on Monday morning. After Willie Cauley-Stein had that nice game, I was offered D'Angelo Russell for Willie Cauley-Stein. I accepted. I don't trust Carl with WCS, and that idiot Scott... shout out to Byron Scott, has to let Russell loose at some point. I think this was a monster steal for me, a gift. Trade 4, I've just acquired 3 point guards, Reggie, Ish, and D'Angelo. I already own Kyrie and Rubio. I'm eyeballing players that specialize in threes. When the owner of Klay Thompson posts that he's on the block, I immediately offer my Kyrie Irving for Klay Thompson. Boom, he accepts. This could come back to haunt me, but I'm not worried. The Cavs are a mess. So overall, in 4 trades in a week, which is pretty busy going from Scott, players acquired Reggie Jackson, Gordon Hayward, Ish Smith, D'Angelo Russell, and Klay Thompson. Players lost KCP, George Hill, Draymond Green, Willie Cauley-Stein, and Kyrie Irving. Busy week. Indeed, it was a busy week, Scott. Now, there's a lot to digest with all those trades, and the main reason that I wanted to highlight this is just show, first of all, how active someone can be and really setting themselves out with a goal, but also the most important thing is how important it is to target specific things in trades. Now, I hear it all the time from people who send me messages and they'll send me tweets, and I'll often say pure value or in a vacuum. And to be honest, it doesn't make sense to me because I don't care about pure value. I care about value to my team. So he's done a trade of trading away Draymond Green, and people go, oh, you can't trade Draymond, that's bad, that's bad. But for what he wanted, and looking at the way his team was, yeah, it worked out for him because he was able to get improvements in the categories he wanted. So if you have a look on the screen, you'll see on the right-hand side down the bottom, lots of greens and lots of reds because that's what he did. He gained, this is based on our Basketball Monster projections per game, by trading those five guys away and getting those five guys in return, he gained an extra 3.5 points per player per game. So the five guys he gets averaged 17.6 points. The five guys he gave away, 14.1. So he was looking to increase his points. He did it by a massive amount. He increased his threes by a significant amount as well, almost in a similar degree. He lost a stack of rebounds. He's not maybe competing in rebounds. Yeah, so he lost 1.9 rebounds per game, which over five players is 10 rebounds per game played, which whatever that accumulates to. He gained a shitload of assists. 1.3 assists is a massive gain. It's equivalent to what he gained in points, as you can see by the number over in the Z scores right down the bottom. He lost a lot of steals. He lost a lot of blocks. He lost a lot of field goal percentage. If he's punting, say, field goals, he's likely, his big man isn't big. He's not going to get rebounds. He's not going to be getting block shots. So he doesn't care. But he increased his free throws by 6%. It's huge. And that's what he's looking for. He's done well. He's increased his points massively. His threes massively. His assists massively. His free throws massively. He's lost his rebounds, steals, blocks, and field goal percentage. And overall, you look at it, and even by looking at this, you say, okay, the net gain is negative 0.7 standard score. But it's how you break it down. For some teams, it's a horrific deal to lose. Oh, you've lost all these blocks, you've lost the field goal percentage. For some teams, it means nothing. Absolutely nothing. And in Scott's case, he set out with specific goals that he wanted to achieve, and he increased those things. And it's also a good sign of a way that you can change your team strategy throughout a season just by making the right aggressive deals and giving up sometimes what might be the best player, but if it doesn't fit what you're trying to do, then there's no point of him being on your team. And Draymond Green is great, and you heard a bit losing his assists, but when you're bringing in Ish Smith 7 assists and Reggie Jackson 7 and Gordon Hayward's 4 and a bit and Klay Thompson's 2.5 and D'Angelo Russell's 4, which could potentially go up as well, he ends up winning in assists. It's really a great exercise to me in seeing what sort of value you can have or what you can do with trades and how important it is to look at trades on an individual team basis. And by looking at it and saying, this is what my team needs and this is what I need to do to get it better. And it all comes back to the stuff that I talked about plenty of times in the off-season, in the draft time. A guy between 30 and 70 on a draft board or a list of rankings, they're the same. It just matters which guy you want and what stats you want and the way you're building your team. And those rankings in the end, it don't really mean much if you build a team that makes no sense. So Scott, a busy week. Obviously a huge change to your team, and hopefully those trades that you made really strengthened what you were able to do, and you were able to get rid of some excess stats you had in other categories that are still going to make you competitive in majority of the categories to get enough wins. But if you were aiming to increase those categories, you did it very, very successfully. So that's just, I think, a way of highlighting that point that I always try and get across, is that it's about the value to your team. It's about what it brings to your overall squad and not necessarily about pure value. Because in the end, pure value doesn't necessarily mean anything. It all comes down to how does it relate to your team. And I think that Scott's shown us there with some pretty impressive wheeling and dealing. Not everyone's going to be able to do that, especially all in 1 week, but some pretty impressive stuff there from Scott. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk some DFS for Monday. I saw ya. We're looking at the DFS action for Monday, which happens to be a Tuesday here, which also happens to be Australia Day. So looking forward, everyone in Australia looking forward to 9 games of NBA when everyone doesn't have to work. Plus, we get to watch the Spurs and Warriors as it happens. So cheers, Australia Day. Couldn't have happened on a better day for us. 9 games. Let's get into it. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Cleveland Cavaliers should be an easy opportunity for Tyronn Lue to get his NBA coaching career off to at least get a win. Kevin Garnett looks like he's not going to play for the Timberwolves, but apparently, and I read this on somewhere on Twitter from one of the Wolves beat writers, it's good news because Nikola Pekovic's minutes are going to be increased. Not sure how that's really good news because I don't see what Pekovic brings to this team, but I suppose it's good from a personal level for Pekovic that he is able to increase his minutes now. That just gives Sam Mitchell another excuse not to play Gorgui Dieng. What's happening here? There's something happening with my screen. I need to bring that up again. This is not an overly appealing DFS game. I do like from Minnesota though, Shabazz Muhammad. He's at 4,200. The minutes have been really good for him, averaging 31 minutes across his last 5. He put up 27.6 in the last game. And this is a format where he really thrives. He's not that great for category leagues, but for points leagues, and that's what DFS basically is, he can be a good player. And at 4,200, I think that he is someone that you have to consider using at that sort of price tag. It's not an expensive price tag. Do you expect him to get more than 20 points? Yes, I pretty much do. And even though it's against the Cavs, I think he's a pretty decent guy to have a look at. This game could be over pretty quickly. So LeBron at 9,900. Yes, he's probably going to be able to kill the Wolves, but might he play 32 minutes? I still think he might be in, no, let me play big minutes mode because new coach, all that sort of stuff. So there is still some value in using LeBron at less than 10,000, but there is a little bit of hesitancy there. And Kevin Love against his former team, I don't think that's really too big of a concern here. It's not in Minnesota. It's in Cleveland. They have been shutting down power forwards to a degree, so not sure that he's the greatest guy to look at here. Same with Kyrie Irving. I reckon we'll leave him alone. At 5,000 for J.R. Smith, it's a positive matchup for him. He has been playing pretty well the last couple of games, so I'm okay with running him out there. For the rest of the Cavs guys, Tristan Thompson, Timofey Mozgov, I don't think we really need to pay a huge amount of attention to that. And by a huge amount, I mean any at all. On the Timberwolves side of things, Ricky Rubio, 6,800. Really nice matchup against Kyrie Irving. He put up 45 in the last game, Rubio, in only 29 minutes. He's at 6,800, so you're looking for him to get over 30 points, which I think he can do. It's not a bad spot for him, but overall, I reckon I'll find a better point guard option than Rubio on the board, but he's not someone that I'm counting out. I'm not using Zach LaVine. Andrew Wiggins, not using him in this matchup at 6,900. But Karl-Anthony Towns is someone we always have to consider. He's at 7,700. I think that's a bit expensive heading up against Cleveland. 7,700 means you've got to be pushing 40 points. And yes, he is averaging 44 across the last three. It was only 31 in the last game, so 37 average across the last five. And it's not an easy matchup. The Cavs do restrict big men from putting up points. So Towns is not someone that I'm massively in love with. And shockingly enough, not massively in love with Nikola Pekovic either, despite the fact that he is most likely going to start in place of Kevin Garnett next to Karl-Anthony Towns in what still remains one of the most dickish rotational moves in the NBA. The Celtics and the Wizards. The Wizards are favored by two. The total is 212.5. Otto Porter looks like he will be back for the Wizards, so that's going to impact guys like Kelly Oubre and to a degree Jared Dudley, who's now on the bench as well. We assume Nene is going to continue to start. He's at 4,400. He put up almost 33 in the last game in the start. He's got an easier matchup against the Celtics. At 4,400, I like Nene here. I think that he is someone whose ownership shouldn't be very high. I think he's in a real positive spot here. I also like Otto Porter if he wasn't coming back from injury. He's at 5,900. So for him to approach 30, I'm not sure he's going to get there, to be honest. I'd much rather use a guy like Marcin Gortat at 7,200, who's been really rock solid at 36 points for most nights. That's what he's averaging over the last three, a 34 across his last five, a minimum score of 28.5. So a pretty rock solid sort of player is Gortat. Avery Bradley, 5,600, has been putting up some nice numbers as well. He's averaging almost 28 points, and that's sort of right on value. The defensive capabilities of Bradley Beal don't scare me off with Avery Bradley, and I think he's a pretty nice play in this one too. 5,200 for Marcus Smart. The salary's come up a little bit now over 5,000. He's been playing really well, though, putting up stats on a pretty consistent basis. I don't think I'll use him, just given we don't know what the role is necessarily going to be. And I say the same thing about the power forwards, Jared Sullinger, Amir Johnson, Kelly Olynyk. They're all worth looking at in a tournament, especially Sullinger, who's averaging almost 30 points across the last three games, but there's an inherent level of risk with them. Jay Crowder's at 6,600. The numbers just haven't quite been there. 29 average across his last five, 28 today, even though he did score 20 points. Probably not a guy that I'm using. Isaiah Thomas at 8,400. No, he's just not returning that sort of value. And John Wall's at 10,000. Now, the last time I said let's fade him when he played the Celtics, he put up about 75 DFS points. It's still a tough matchup. Does he do it twice? I'm gonna double down and say probably no. At 10,000, can he get 50 points? He can, but I don't think that I want to put it into my lineup and hope that it works out. 6,700 for Brad Beal is too expensive. The Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls is the next game. There is no spread for this one yet because basically every single player on Miami has some sort of injury concern. Dwayne Wade is going to be playing. He's still dealing with that shoulder problem. Josh McRoberts is doubtful. Gerald Green is questionable. Beno Udrih is probable with his neck issue. Luol Deng is questionable with his eye. Hassan Whiteside is questionable with his side, his oblique. And Kirk Heinrich is out for the Bulls. So there's stacks of things and lots of different directions that this can go. If Udrih plays, well, we know that Goran Dragic is out, so that's one thing. If Udrih plays at 3,800, I really like him. The last game he played, he put up 33 points. This is a real positive matchup for him and for Tyler Johnson at 4,200. If I'm picking between one of those two guys, it's going to be Udrih. But if Udrih's out, I'm okay with throwing Johnson out there at 4,200. Not many other guys really stand out. I don't hate Dwayne Wade at 6,800. The shoulder does bother me, but the defense of the Bulls bothers me a little bit more. In terms of me being a Bulls fan. So I think that Wade could come in and put up some really nice numbers. Nick Mirotic at 4,600. Really good game in the last one. Not a positive matchup for him, so I'll leave him alone. And Pau Gasol at 86. It just feels too expensive at 8,600. Yes, he put up 48 in the last game, but I don't really see him doing that against Miami. Derrick Rose at 62. I want him under 6,000. I'm still not happy using him unless he's under 6,000. Chris Bosh at 7,600 is in play, and he gets a real bump playing against this Bulls front court. I reckon you're pretty confident getting 35 out of him. Hassan Whiteside at 7,900. We don't know if he's playing. If he's playing, I think it's a pretty decent bet, but at this point, I'd say no, he's not playing. Jim Butler, 9,000. Now the salary's risen. He's averaging 33. That's not enough at 9,000. Not a good matchup. No thank you. Taj Gibson, I'll leave alone. Doug McDermott, no thanks. Nothing really else is standing out as being anything that's super appealing in this one. The Orlando Magic and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are favored by 6, and the total is 191.5 points. Injury-wise, not too much apart from Tony Allen, who's dealing with that that knee and hamstring issue. He's still questionable. Now, his absence means that more minutes come for guys like Matt Barnes and Courtney Lee. On the Magic side of things, Aaron Gordon, 4,300. Hopefully, he doesn't run into early foul trouble and he can play more than 24 minutes, which obviously would be ideal for his daily fantasy prospects. I do like him at that salary a lot. Toby Harris at 6,000. He's been averaging over 30 points the last three games. He's been playing relatively well. I'm okay with using him. And Vic Oladipo at 6,200, not a great matchup, but at his price and with his level of recent production, I'm generally not, I'm not adverse to using him. I'm not bullish on him, though, by any means. If Tony Allen's out, 5,200 from Matt Barnes is something that I can definitely get behind. And Mike Conley at 6,600, he's just not playing enough minutes at the moment. 7,900 for Marc Gasol, only played 32 minutes in the last game, with Ryan Hollins now logging 10 or 12 minutes a night, and Gasol still dealing with that knee issue. I'm not sure I want to run him out at almost 8,000. Lord Alfred Payton at 6,300, the matchup for him is not all that positive, but he has been putting up big numbers in his last three games, averaging 34 points. Can you rely on him in this one? I don't think rely is the right word. It's okay for a tournament, but for a cash game, I'm not all that thrilled with it. While Nick Vucevic at 7,800 is pretty highly priced. He put up 47 in the last game, but no, I'm okay with using Vucevic in this one. It's not a great matchup, but I think that he's a decent guy to have a look at. Evan Fournier in a bench role, he's strictly going to be a tournament guy at 4,800. And same goes with Mario Chalmers, who's been putting up some decent numbers, but at 5,400, I can't rely upon him to be able to do that in a cash game setup. The Houston Rockets and the New Orleans Pelicans, no spread released for this one yet. We don't know if Dwight Howard's playing, so that's why there is no spread out yet. Obviously, if Howard plays, it changes a lot of the front court rotational minutes. On the Pelicans, Norris Cole at 4,300. He's averaging 21.7 across the last three. That's bang on where he needs to be, basically, with his value. He's still not a good player, so I'm not overly excited about him. Tyreek at 71. I'm scared off with his minutes, so I'm probably not going to be using him. Anthony Davis at 10,300. Not only is he Anthony Davis, but he's playing the Rockets. Rockets bump is in effect. He's averaging 47 across his last three. His lowest score in his last five games is 39. I think this is all set for a 5,000 points. That'd be a lot for a 50-point game from Anthony Davis. I'm also not too bad with using Ryan Anderson. Rockets bump is huge for his position. He put up 32 in the last game. Extra three-point shooting is required with Eric Gordon out. So he could be a guy who really takes advantage of this extra lax defense that the Rockets provide. Drew Holiday at 6,500. If only Elvin Gentry would give him 30 minutes. Hey, but that's too hard to do. At 6,500, the salary is just not quite in line with the production at this point. James Harden at 10,000. He's averaging almost 60 points in his last three games. He's over 50 in his last five. Definitely more than happy deploying him. I'd rather spend 10 on him than 9 on Jimmy Butler at the moment. Trevor Ariza at 5,100. If Dwight's out, I'm definitely comfortable using Trevor Ariza at 5,100. That's not a big salary. If Dwight plays, I'm probably going to steer clear of using him. If Dwight plays at 8,300, I'm actually okay with using Dwight against the Pelicans, even coming back from an ankle injury. Terrence Jones, forget about it. Clint Capella, maybe if Howard is out. What about Josh Smith? Does he come into consideration? I think he has to. He's at 3,900. He put up 29.6 today. Even in 20 minutes, and if Howard's out, I think he's even more of a lock to put up big numbers. At that salary, he doesn't even need to crack 20 points to return 5x value. Smith is someone who should definitely be on your radar. He'll probably go out and bomb everything now, but yeah, he's looked really good in his return to Houston. And it makes you think, what was happening with the Clippers? The Atlanta Hawks and the Denver Nuggets, The Hawks are favored by 5. The total is 205.5 points. Paul Millsap should be back after having to attend the funeral of his grandfather. On the Nuggets side of things, Jameer Nelson is questionable with his wrist, and Jameer Nelson is doubtful, and Kenneth Faried is questionable. But I would put Faried on the doubtful side of questionable, and I don't think he plays, going by some of his recent quotes. That's going to push Darrell Arthur at 4,300 definitely into consideration. He's already averaging over 20 points in his last five games, and he can be a guy that could push to 26 or 27 easily with Faried out. And Nikola Jokic also at 5,000. He was monstrous in the last game. He's a guy that is a 25 average across his last five as it is. Extra role should get close, or could get close to 27 or 28. They make some really nice tournament plays. With Nelson likely out, Emmanuel Mudiay has been playing really well, much, much improved. He put up 28 average across the last three. I think 28 to 30 is exactly where you should be looking at him in this one. And Danilo Gallinari at 7,100, just been fantastic this season. The Hawks won't be able to completely restrict him, so I think he's a pretty solid guy. And same as Al Horford. He's at 7,600. You'd expect 35 points out of him relatively comfortably, I think, taking on this Denver front court. I also like Kent Bazemore at 52. It's going to be a matchup of the two. These guys aren't good at basketball, but have been good at fantasy. Small forwards with Kent Bazemore and Will Barton facing off. I'd much rather spend $800 less on Kent Bazemore than I would spend the $6,000 on Will Barton, who is really, really struggling at the moment. Bazemore's playing pretty well. He's not blowing you away, but he's been pretty consistent with what he's been able to do. Millsap at 8,900. That salary is so high. But I'm actually okay with using, given how the Nuggets are, assuming he plays. He's got a 43 average across his last five, and at 89, you can't ask for really much more than that. He's been super consistent as well. So Paul Millsap is someone that I do enjoy using. Jeff Teague, have no enjoyment in using him at the moment, but his presence means I need to steer clear of Dennis Schroeder in most sort of situations. In a tournament, fine, I'd definitely take Schroeder over Teague, but I've got no confidence in a cash game to use either of those two guys. The Detroit Pistons and the Utah Jazz, this game does not look to be a great fantasy one. The Jazz are favored by 2. The total is 193 in this one. Derek Favors, who knows when we're going to see him again. Hopefully it's soon. Rudy Gobert at 7,000 has definitely some appeal. 31 average across the last three, 33 across his last five. He looks to be rounding into a bit of form. It's not a must-own sort of guy or a must-roster sort of player, but he's in a decent spot. Trey Burke at 4,900, don't love it. And Reggie Jackson at 68, nor do I love that one. Actually, there's not much I love in this game at all, to be honest. I go through most of these guys. Andre Drummond, not against Gobert. Ersan Ilyasova, no thanks. As much as I love Ilyasova. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, not against the Jazz. Although he's not a terrible option. He's averaging 27.5 across his last three, but the Jazz make him a little bit harder to deploy. And on the Gordon Hayward's the other one I'd consider, 8,200 for him, but Marcus Morris has been quite good defensively, and they can chuck Kentavious Caldwell-Pope onto him. He's got a 45 average across his last three, but at 8,200, that price just feels a little bit restrictive to me. Rod Hood at 5,500, I'd rather it if he wasn't playing against the Pistons, but he's an okay guy to look at. Two games to go. The next one is the Charlotte Hornets and the Sacramento Kings. No spread for this one yet because we don't know the status of Rudy Gay. Also, a couple of Hornets guys we don't know the status of. Nick Batum, probably most importantly, and Jeremy Lamb, both dealing with toe issues. Spencer Hawes at 3,800 is definitely someone you want to look at. An easy matchup. He's playing good minutes. He's at 3,800. He's averaged 25 across the last three. Definitely one of the best cheap centers on the board. And one of the guys he's going up against, Willie Cauley-Stein, is also one of the best cheap centers on the board. 4,300 for Willie Cauley-Stein, averaging over 30 in the last three games in 31 minutes. He appears like, at the moment, he is here to stay, and it looks like he's going to be a real DFS bargain for the short term. If Nick Batum happens to play at 6,500, I reckon that's good value, but I'm clearly hesitant about rostering him, and even if they say he's going to play, about what sort of minutes he's going to get. So it's not an ideal spot there. 5,000 for Jeremy Lin. I'd happily use him at that salary. And Rudy Gay at 7,500. Similar sort of story with Batum. I don't mind it, but not coming back from an injury. Rajon Rondo at 8,300. I think he's got definite ability to put up a big night here at 40.9 is within reach. And DeMarcus Cousins is priced at 11,200. And the stupid thing is he's been exceeding that value. He's averaging almost 60 points in the last three games. He is on a massive tear. Now, the Hornets are somehow restricting opposition centers. They're one of the harder teams to play against for big men. 11,000 is a lot. I will probably regret fading Boogie, but I reckon I will. It's just so much money, especially when there's a cheap center like Willie Cauley-Stein out there. And Spencer Hawes at 3,800. They're guys that you're probably going to get more value out, but it's hard to go past 60 points from Cousins. I don't think you'll get 60 in this one, though, to be honest. Speaking of big guys and putting up big numbers, Kemba Walker at 9,000. He's averaging 46, 48 across his last five. I'm okay with using him against the Kings, who aren't great, and Rajon Rondo. He's been fantastic. And if Batum is out, I'm even more behind using Kemba Walker. The last game of the night is the game of the season, the San Antonio Spurs and the Golden State Warriors. There is no Tim Duncan. He is out of this one. LaMarcus Aldridge is considered probable, but he would play. David West at 4,500 has to come into consideration, who will likely start in place of Duncan. He's averaging 22.5 points in 19 minutes across the last three games. If he can get 25, 26 points at 4,500, he's done his job. Kawhi Leonard at 7,600 shapes up as a real bargain. A positive matchup for him. He's averaging 29 across his last three, but that's in 27 minutes. You'd expect this game to be close. You'd expect Kawhi to get 34 minutes, 35 minutes, and he could push 40 points here. This is a spot to use Kawhi when I'm not sure too many people will. Manu Ginobili at 4,700. He's not going to put up 43 points again like he did in his last game. He's not a bad matchup at 4,700. I think that's not a horrible price. Harrison Barnes, forget about it with Kawhi on him. I'm not using him. LaMarcus Aldridge at 6,900. He could see some extra run and some extra shots with Duncan out. And 6,900, not a bad price, but 35, it just feels like it's a little bit of a stretch for him this season. Danny Green at 3,800, I also don't mind. I think that he is worth a punt in a tournament at 3,800. Hopefully they give him extra run. He's been playing a little bit better of late. And at 3,800, he doesn't need to do much to be useful. 6,900 for Klay Thompson. The salary's come down, but the matchups of Green and Kawhi make me a little bit hesitant about using him. 94 for Draymond Green. Probably not, to be honest. And Steph Curry's at 11,200. Same price as Boogie. He's averaging 58.3 across the last three games. He's averaging 53.5 across his last five. I'm probably a little bit happier using Steph than I am about using Boogie if I'm spending 11,000, but it's such a lot to spend. It really is, but you could work a lineup around it quite easily, and you could put Curry in and then use a Willie Cauley-Stein at center and help you save that money that way. So I can get behind it in that sort of sense. All right, let's bring up the DFS picks of the day. Oops, that's the wrong one. That's the one. At point guard, assuming he plays, Beno Udrih, 3,800. Emmanuel Mudiay, 5,200. And Rajon Rondo, 83. Shooting guards, Danny Green, 38. Kent Bazemore, 52. And Jim Harden, 10,000. Small forward, Shabazz Muhammad, 42. Danilo Gallinari, 71. And Kawhi Leonard, 76. At power forward, Aaron Gordon, 43. Ryan Anderson, 55. And Anthony Davis, 10,300. And the centers, Willie Cauley-Stein, 4,300, Marcin Gortat, 72, and Al Horford, 7,600. We are done today, guys. Make sure you are subscribing to this podcast on iTunes or on YouTube. Leave a review if you could do that. It would be great. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball, Basketball Monster at BaskMonster, and the website is obviously basketballmonster.com. And don't forget to check out hardwoodparoxysm.com, and a big thanks to our sponsors, SeatGeek, promo code REDROCK, and to moneyball.com.au. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.